This episode is sponsored by Kendo UI. Kendo UI allows you to build better apps faster. They have a comprehensive library ranging from data grids and charts to buttons and sliders. Plus, you can use their components as plain JavaScript as well as in Angular, React, and Vue. They have a large collection of customizable popular themes like Bootstrap and Material. Go check them out at javascriptjabber.com/KendoUI.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Views on Vue. My name is Chris Fritz from the Vue Core team. And today on our panel, we have Joe Eames, teacher and organizer of Framework Summit, and gamer extraordinaire, which I think means he has some wicked high scores.
Hey, everybody.
Divya Sasidharan, Vue developer, contributor, and also now helping organize Framework Summit for the Vue stuff.
Hello.
And possibly more than just the Vue stuff. I'm not sure.
We'll see.
And then also Eric Henschett, author of Vue.js in Action, and YouTuber extraordinaire. We're very extraordinary today.
Very extraordinary. Yep. Hey.
And on his YouTube channel, he has a bunch of like educational videos about Vue.js and other development, right?
Yep. For sure.
Cool. And today our guests are Greg Pollack and Adam Jarr.
Hey, glad to be here with you guys. Thanks.
Hello, everyone.
Would you two like to introduce yourselves? Greg, why don't you go first?
Oh, well, sure. I live here in Orlando, Florida with Adam here. I'm really passionate about teaching online, being a father. I've got a 10 and 11 year old, and also pretty passionate about self-awareness and leadership development and startups.
Yep, I'm Adam Jarr, and I teach alongside full-time with Greg at Vue Mastery. So really our goal is to be the ultimate learning resource for Vue developers. We do that by releasing a lesson a week, and we also produce educational we disseminate educational information through our newsletter and our podcast.
Awesome. So you both founded Vue Mastery together, right? Like you've both been in it from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to get into the Vue space and start teaching people about Vue?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, definitely coming from code school, we did there really effectively is teach people to get started with lots of different technologies. But what I saw was other websites out there like lauracast.com, railscast.com, where they were able to really go really deep and create these resource libraries that people were able to use as they could, and they were really useful. And I always was really curious about what it'd be like to create one of those and what does it take to create something like that. And also I'm really passionate about open source. You know, I think, you know, at one point I realized the best way for me to make an impact on a world, on the world, whether it's, you know, finding a cure for cancer or getting the next person to Mars, would be to identify the most impactful, innovative open source technologies and figure out what I can do to help them accelerate the adoption, get more developers using it, create more innovation in the world. And I love teaching. I love picking up a new tech and really teaching it well and watching it grow. And so, you know, probably 6 months ago, I took a look out there and at different technologies, which ones are in that sweet spot where they're not yet to the mainstream. They're still in the early adoption phase, and there's kind of a lack of, you know, really good educational content there. And so, you know, we looked at all of them, Adam and I together looked at a bunch of different tech, and we realized, well, maybe Vue seems like it's up and coming and it's still in the early adoption phase, and we can come into this community and start making an impact and helping with adoption. And what the other thing that really excites me is I wanted to do it in a way that really supports the community, which is why we kind of have built in from the beginning of the business model that 25% of all revenue we make, not profit, 25% of all revenue we make, we're giving back to the Vue.js project itself. So when you pay us $19 a month, we take 25% of that and every month give it back to the Vue project, which is, you know, self-sustaining. It's just really exciting to me. So the more successful we are, the more we support the tech. Not only are we supporting it through educational things, but also monetarily with the help of our customers.
Hey, Greg, do you see some parallels between, I know you were in, you created Rails for Zombies and Code School. And do you see some parallels between that community, like how early on that you started in giving educational material to that community compared to the Vue community and where they are now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a lot. I got into it, you know, like just when Rails hit 1.0, it was still very early. And so I'm definitely seeing the community evolve in a lot of the same ways, from conferences popping up here and there, to more podcasts, to more people teaching. I think it's all really good. I love especially to see, you know, people like the other people on this podcast who also teach. You know, I think all of that's needed. We need a huge, you know, community of teachers in order for this technology to really make it far into the mainstream and get even more popular. So I'm excited to see all that happen, and I'm excited to be part of it.
Fantastic. So,
hey, I've got a question.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Joe.
I kind of wanted to back up and just get a little bit more. Code School is a, you know, it was a very big deal. It continues to be extremely popular. I was kind of interested to just hear a little bit more of the story of Code School and where it went, and just a little bit more into that.
Yeah, sure. It was about 10 years ago that I started figuring out how to do consulting work and work as a consultant and build websites for other people using Ruby on Rails. And through that, you know, I started the Rails Envy podcast back in that time, where, you know, we basically did what we're doing now with the Official View News podcast, where we curate the best stories. And I started from there. I started the blog, the podcast. I started recording my conference talks and really realized how much I really enjoyed teaching and helping developers. And then a side effect of doing all that is I got more consulting work. And then it was years later that there was this website called Try Ruby, where you could actually like code Ruby right there in the browser. This was before Codecademy, but same sort of idea where you're coding in the browser. And, you know, one of my coworkers just said, what would happen if we took the videos you enjoy producing, put it together with the interactivity that you saw from Try Ruby to create something that taught people Rails? And that became Rails for Zombies, which was just another one of those free projects that I did to help developers with the side effect of hopefully getting more consulting work. But as soon as we put out Rails for Zombies, oh my goodness, we got so much traffic, and I started getting even book publishers reaching out to me saying, hey, can we pay you to do another one of these? And, you know, when people try to pay you to do stuff, you should really start to pay attention. So we kind of sat back and goes, whoa, maybe we have something here. Maybe we should create another one of these Rails for Zombies-like courses and this time charge for it. Why don't we try that? And that really kind of became Code School. We originally charged, you know, paid for courses one-off, and then eventually went on a recurring revenue model where people were paying, you know, $29 a month. And it just really grew from there. A lot of the success came from a lot of the partnerships that we would create. You know, we went to the Angular guys and we said, hey, can we create a free course for you guys? And we put it on the front page, and they're like, yeah, let's do it. We went to GitHub and we said, hey, can we create a free course on Git and you guys can put it on the front page of Git? And they're like, yeah, let's do it. And so we had all these amazing free courses out there that really drove a lot of traffic. Code School grew from, you know, $10,000 in recurring revenue a month to, I think towards the end, it was up around maybe about $400,000 to $500,000 a month. And so we were about making about $5 or $6 million a year in run rate, which was great. And about half of that was profit. It was a pretty profitable business. But we got to a point when we were up to about 45 people where we realized we have a couple options. We can keep on growing slow and steady. We never did a hockey stick, as you might hear in the startup world. So we could keep on growing slow and steady, and hopefully nobody comes along and outspends us and outcompetes with us. Hopefully the economy doesn't collapse. Hopefully, so we keep it on slow and steady, or we can go raise investment. I've still never taken on any investment. You know, we basically bootstrapped it out of the consultancy. So we had the consultancy, we used money from that to build Code School. And Code School was pretty quickly profitable, but that had only been because I'd spent the prior 4 or 5 years building an audience. So that was pretty awesome how that worked. So we could go raise money at that point, or we could potentially look for an acquisition. We didn't need an acquisition, but I got some good startup advice from somebody that said, like, hey, if you ever want to look for an acquisition, do it right before you raise investment. And so I looked out there and met with some of the companies that I really admired, some people who I said, oh man, I'd love to work with them someday, and seeing, you know, learned a lot in that process. And eventually we ended up deciding to join the Pluralsight team, because we went to Pluralsight and we were just like blown away by how much they were like us. It was the same culture. They basically said, you know, we'd be open to working with you guys, merging with you guys, but, you know, we want to keep on doing what we're doing the way we're doing it and taking care of our customers. And at the time they said, yeah, that's great. We'll keep on doing it. And it was pretty amazing how that whole thing worked, and they were really good to work with. And I'm a big proponent of giving people who work with you equity, who put blood, sweat, and tears into the work that you do. So even though I didn't really have to, I had given away over half the company of the people who worked with me. So when we had that payout with Pluralsight, we ended up getting acquired for about $36 million. It was about two-thirds cash, one-third equity. I was able to give a meaningful amount of money to the people who put their blood, sweat, and tears into the project, and it felt really good. That was a lot.
That is awesome. That was such a cool story, though. Like, I'm a Pluralsight author, right? I've been around with Pluralsight for a long time, and that's all stuff I didn't know at all.
Oh, really? Yeah, it was great to join the Pluralsight team, and they really showed me. There was a lot of stuff they did about the acquisition process, which like just blew me away. Right. I could go on about that stuff, but let me know what you're curious about, and I'll tell you more.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I was actually with Pluralsight out in the NASDAQ when they went public.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Hopefully you got some of that stock there, Joe.
I did buy a few shares of stock. Unfortunately, authors didn't get like grants, so I had to pay for mine. But the stock has been doing fairly well, in fact, so I'm not unhappy about it.
Yeah, that's
but
weird.
I'm not like, it's not like it's buying me a car or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. You know, so everybody was with Code School has some stock, and of course, you know, like the people who work there, we can't do anything with it for 180 days. That's kind of the way it works.
Right.
But we're just stoked that our make believe money is no longer make believe money.
Right. I'm sure.
Yeah.
So now you're working on Vue Mastery, and you're still producing mostly video content, right?
Yeah. I love that. And that's what I love. I love taking these hard to learn subjects and figuring out, you know, an effective way to teach them visually. That really is what I love.
Why did you choose video? Out of curiosity, what are the strengths of video? Like, what are the things that you can do with video that you find you can't do with some other mediums, like, you know, a blog post or, you know, podcasts or writing a book?
Oh, it's all about it. Well, I'm a very visual, maybe it's me. I'm just a very visual learner. You know, it's what I love about video, especially with the medium that we use in Keynote, is I can use animations to teach things step by step. I can use visuals to create diagrams, and I can use iconography. I'm really enjoying right now how I can use iconography, because if I show you a concept or even an algorithm, I can use an icon to represent that algorithm. And the next time you see that, I can just pop up that icon. We're visual creatures, right? So if I can use an icon to represent a pattern and then use that in multiple ways throughout my course, you don't have to think. You just sort of look at it and remember. So I just always loved it as a medium. It's such a wonderful challenge to just... And it's also about just showing the one piece of code that you're trying to learn. I could show you my entire, you know, code base. If I'm working on a big code base, I could show you 100 lines of code, and I could focus in on 10 of them. But if I can just show you full screen 10 of them and then, you know, morph from page to page and add in code as I do it, I can get really focused on where I'm directing your attention. So I just find it's the way I like to teach and the way I like to learn too.
Yeah, to piggyback off on that, it allows us to really guide what people are seeing at the given time, so that we're isolating what they're seeing so they're not distracted. And also, it's really about, so we're teaching these abstract concepts. Most of programming is quite abstract, and you're keeping ideas in your head and trying to keep them connected within your head. But with video and with animation, with the visuals and the icons, we make what would just be entirely abstract, and we make it more concrete, so it feels a little more tangible, and you have a little more to grasp onto.
Yeah, I know with Code School, you guys were all the videos were really well done, and I know that you also put in like badges, and there was almost like a gamification, maybe a little bit. Is that kind of an idea what you guys want to do with Vue Mastery eventually?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of already have it already. We have some badges in there. Once you're able to complete the course, you earn the badge. And it was always fascinating to me. I would run up on people to be like, gamification's crap. Nobody really cares about the badges or the points. And then I would go to conferences. And then I have people coming up to me at booths that are like, yeah, man, every time you guys come out with a course, you know, I have to take it because I have to get all the points, because I have to stay ahead of all my teammates because I'm number one right now. I got to stay number one. Or you'd have the people that were like, I love your design. I love the badges. Every time you come out with a course, I got to collect them all because I got to have them all. And just their beautiful design. And so it was always amazing. I would run into people. People are motivated by different things. And some people, all those gamification principles actually work. They motivate them to help them learn. They don't work with everybody, but some people they work for.
Yeah, it feels like that term was like big a few years ago, and now it's not used as much anymore. But I feel like it's still giving some sort of incentive for someone to come back to your site, to consume the content, and to get rewarded. Seems like a no-brainer on a site like this, especially like a subscription site where you it's software as a service. I think yours is software as a service. Yes, $19 a month or $190 a year. You want people to keep coming back and to have a reason to come back.
Yeah, exactly. And unlike Code School, you know, at Code School, we put out one course a month, and it really, like, I always wanted to get more weekly. And so we've kind of made a commitment at New Mastery that we will always be putting out a new video a week, a new lesson a week, so that it's our goal that, you know, you habitually come back weekly for that learning on your journey to View Mastery.
Yeah, and I remember Code School too. One maybe slight criticism, people said it never, I mean, you did have some advanced courses, but there was a lot of like introductory courses for all the different topics. But with View Mastery, you guys are, you can get really deep into the technical details, not just for beginners, maybe more intermediate and advanced topics too. I'm assuming that's the plan.
Yeah, we're hoping to get there, definitely. And you know, one of the disadvantages, especially it got, man, the bigger Code School got, the worse our customer lifetime value got, which is basically means, you know, people would come, they'd subscribe just for the intro course that they wanted, they'd unsubscribe. And we'd have a lot of people coming back for that. And I think, you know, that's why I think there's probably more value in, you know, creating a resource library, which is why I want to put out one video a week. So that hopefully, you know, a year or two now, we, you know, are a very useful resource for developers when they need to learn how to do one-off things, they can look up our lesson and watch it.
Yeah. I mean, this is Eric. I'm a content creator on YouTube. And when I put out videos, like the ones that get more and more, like the basic tutorials of how to get started and up and running do much better than here. Let me show you some advanced Vuex topic on how to set up the store and this intricate detail. Sometimes the bigger stuff does better, but the more general videos do better. But I can assume that once you start having this library of content, it adds a lot more value.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. People stick around for longer. At least that's the theory. Your content is great, by the way. I've watched several of your things. You're a wonderful teacher.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I learned from your videos.
As have I. I've picked both of their brains about how they do some of the things that they do, and reviewing some of their content at the same time as like planning some of my talks has really forced me to up my game. Learning how to use Magic Move and Keynote and stuff like that. Yeah, Adam and Greg are both really artists at that stuff. So,
thank you.
One of the things that like I find really helpful when I'm learning is at the beginning of a video, I find it's really important to have some kind of jingle.
Here it is again.
Oh, geez.
You know, yeah, it's like, coffee's great. You know, that really helped me with Code School. And I'm disappointed that I'm not seeing jingles on the View Mastery content. When are we going to get our jingle?
Once you complain loud enough.
You heard it, people. Get on Twitter right now. Like, pause the podcast.
Think of all the subscribers you're missing out on because of no jingle.
Would you think so? You think they're like, yeah. I don't know, I got nothing stuck in my head. There's no way I'm subscribing.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, well, I like View Mastery, but there's no jingle.
I mean, you could, you know, like Netflix has like a skip intro button now. You know, you could do something similar. So like the people who like really love the jingle and need it to learn, like I feel like I do, can have the jingle, and the people who don't can just skip it, and it's not a problem.
I have reached the point in my life where I can live without the jingle.
I feel like it was also nice because it was themed. So like every Code School course had a theme to it, like Rails for Zombies. And I was like, what is Vue's theme? Like what is the character or like thing associated with Vue? And that's like something I actually really enjoyed about the jingles, like the little like animation thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of catchy. It sticks in my head, and then like I find myself humming it, and then I realize, oh yeah, I should work on some more CoffeeScript.
Yes.
Yeah, but I hear with Code School, some people really, really hated the jingles.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a polarizing topic. But I think the majority of people, you know, liked them. You know, my theory with that as well was when you sit down to passively watch something, whether it's a technical video or a TV show or you're Netflixing, your brain wants to be entertained, right? And so the moment you start entering into passive watching and entertainment, you want entertainment. And so I have a theory that if you start out entertaining, if you start out with an animation, if you start out with a jingle, and you get that little smile on the side of your face, even if it's cheesy, you're still being entertained. So, you know, we've never tested this theory, but something tells me because you start that way and it's really animated and it's really jingles and it jives, that then you're a little bit more patient with the rest of the video. You're a little more likely to watch more because you've been entertained, even if it's for 15 to 20 seconds.
I actually do feel like that.
So maybe the key is to learn to juggle a little bit and you get like a 30 seconds, hey, watch me juggle, and then let's learn.
30 seconds of watching someone juggle, like 3 seconds and I'm out. I don't think that would be the same kind of stimulation.
I think it's, you know how sometimes people start their podcasts with like the bloopers, like they screw up. I think even like, yeah. I listen to Up First from NPR to get the news, and sometimes they start it with a screw up and it makes you laugh. It's probably the same theory. If you can make people laugh right away, they're more likely to really engage with your content.
Right. Yeah. I noticed that too on a few podcasts. Especially the ones that are like coming out of more of the broadcasting world. When they start doing podcasts, I'm listening to a podcast from the BBC, and they do the same thing. And so it seems like, you know, it's coming from these more sophisticated places, and it's really validating this idea of do something that really grabs and is entertaining right there at the first.
Yeah.
Something else that I appreciate about Vue Mastery is that you're not just producing content. Like, you are trying to like build the community and give back to the community. You know, you already talked about, you know, putting a portion of the revenue aside to, you know, donate back to Vue. You've also recorded the VueConf videos for free. And you've also put out like other videos, you know, updating people on, you know, various, you know, news in the Vue community. And you also work on the Vue News podcast, turning the Vue newsletter into like a 5-minute, like really short, condensed weekly podcast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, so going into this, you know, we were planning on, you know, creating a free podcast anyways, right? So we were going to put that out there. And I don't know if it was you, Chris, that was like, or, you know, somebody, was it you who said, you should talk to Evan about this, or you should talk to Damien about this? Because around the time that we were going to start a podcast, you know, Damien Dulish, who was working for
Monorail.
For Monorail, they were doing a newsletter as well. And Evan said, you know, got us all on a call. And, you know, such a super smart guy, where, you know, it's just very about being collaborative with everybody. He's basically like, you know, wait, you know, do we need people duplicating efforts? Is there any way that you guys could just all work together on one official podcast or one official newsletter instead of creating yet another one? And it was interesting because, you know, we were all gung-ho on creating our own. But then with that initiative, you know, we talked to Damien and realized, wait, we don't really need to create our own. What if we can just help out with one and do that as a part of the sort of the core team of Vue? And so, you know, so that's why how we kind of ended up doing it, is helping Damien and Chris with the newsletter and then doing the sort of podcast version of it. So I think I've just really the point being, I'm just really impressed with how collaborative Evan, you, and even the rest of the people on the ViewCore team are, to just be so inviting and so encouraging for everybody to become contributors and work together.
Yeah, I did suggest you talk to Damien, and I remember at that time you were already talking to him.
Right. So we were talking to, but that was all because of the video too, you know, putting a video together on the front page, which is also kind of a fun story because, I had this theory that if you create video on the front page of these open source projects and allow people to watch a video explanation, my theory is they were more likely to adopt the technology. And so we started out, you know, months ago, like maybe 6-7 months ago, I worked with Adam to create a video on Bulma. So on Bulma.io, you'll see a video with Adam. And we were able to prove there that indeed, if you put a video on the front page, the people who press play and watch that video stick around on the web page longer, visit more pages on the web page. So you might then go on to say they're more likely to adopt the technology. And so we kind of went to the same thing. We went to Evan, went to Chris and said, you know, hey, can we do this for Vue? Can we create a free video for the front page? Because we think it'll increase adoption. And, you know, props to you guys in the Vue team. You know, they kind of took a risk on us. Mm-hmm. Gave us some of their time. You know, we weren't charging for any of our time. We put a lot of effort into that front page video. And sure enough, looking at analytics, we were able to show that people who watch the video stay more engaged, visit more pages on the website, and, you know, are more likely to become Vue developers.
Yeah, I didn't feel like it was too much of a risk. I mean, I was already familiar with your content and was pretty satisfied that the quality would be high of whatever we produced. So
I appreciated that. I just wanted to use science. I wanted to be able to say, because science.
Because science, yeah. No, I've heard from a lot of people that they have enjoyed the video and that they watched the video first and it was a really good introduction for them and gave them a good launching off point to start diving into the docs and learning.
Awesome. That's great to hear.
Deploy more, pay less with DigitalOcean, the simplest all-in-one cloud computing platform for developers. Scale and run cloud applications faster and more efficiently with effortless administration tools to robust compute, flexible configurations, networking services, real-time alerts, and rapid provisioning while enjoying industry-leading price to performance with a flat pricing structure across all global data center regions at any usage volume. Spend more time building better web apps and less time worrying about managing infrastructure with DigitalOcean. Build your next app on DigitalOcean. Get started with a free $100 credit at do.co/viewsonvue.
So you're doing a lot of things with community building, and I've talked to you a little bit privately about community building and like things you've seen in other communities, because Vue obviously isn't the first dev community that you've been a part of. And also within, you know, smaller communities, like within teams and workplaces, like one of the things that you've talked a lot about is fears that people have and like communicating about your fears.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, I think I still have it pinned to the top of my Twitter feed. I have up there a 5-minute video of the biggest screw up of my career. You'll see kind of my passion for organizational psychology, because certainly, as I started building my consultancy, one of the things I really cared about was creating the most effective environment for software developers. I love creating spaces and work environments where people don't have to be afraid of speaking up. They don't feel like they have a boss looking over their shoulder. They can be their authentic selves and they can communicate effectively and, be their best selves. And I learned, you know, a few years ago, there's this term for that. It's called organizational psychology. And I've done a lot of research on that. And I've even learned how to teach a workshop on that called the human element, which I lead people through sometimes about twice a year, which really cuts to the core of figuring out what's in the way of people really communicating effectively and wasting less time at work, being more direct, being more authentic, figuring out what your fears are, what's preventing you from being open. And I love that. I mean, I've got this, I've got this picture up on my wall, and it's the last group photo that I got from the team at Code School. And inside of that, when I have a bad day, And I still have, you know, I still have bad days where things go wrong or they don't go as well as I think they can, or, you know, I get rejected by somebody, or the website breaks down, or customers tell me that, they'll never subscribe because, you know, or for some reason or another. I've got this picture
of the jingle.
Yeah, I got the jingles. I got this picture up the wall. And inside this picture is like, are these thank you notes from people who worked at Code School. And it's probably the most meaningful thing that I, when I'm having a bad day, that I can look at. And when I can see that, yeah, and when they, I see these notes say things like, you know, I never thought I'd be able to be myself in a work environment, or, you know, until I, you know, worked at Code School, I worked with you with the stuff that we did. I never thought that I'd be able to be myself. And you changed my life. And when I can, when I get that from an individual and it's authentic, I mean, there's no better feeling. There's no better feeling than knowing that you were able to make someone feel safe and do what they love. And that really empowers me.
Yeah, that sounds powerful. Are there any like lessons that you think open source teams and communities can learn from that? Or is that something that more applies to workplace teams?
Well, you know, so much of it comes from, when it comes to open source tech, you know, and I definitely saw this in the community with Ruby on Rails, with someone like David Einemeyer Hansen. So much of the behavior about what's acceptable and what's not comes down from the top. And, you know, about 2 weeks ago, I was in New York. I was lucky enough to spend some time with Evan Yu. We did a live webcast. That video, by the way, is up on our YouTube channel. We just did a free live webcast, or just me and him talking about what's new in Vue and answering some questions. And he is just the most humble, growth-minded guy, just normal programmer who is very altruistic, very optimistic, and, you know, more importantly, he knows when to say yes and when to say no. Because it's so easy, you know, when you're in that position that he's in, where I'm sure everybody wants a piece of him, everybody wants his time. It's so important that he's able to stay focused and he's able to run the community with grace and kindness and empower the people around him to work effectively. And I've been so impressed with how he's been able to do that, which just makes me more excited that that I get to be a part of the community with him. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to be said by sort of leading by example and making sure the community is inclusive. And it can be difficult when you're working, you know, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 miles away, and you don't see someone face to face, to really not get discouraged when, let's say, you put in a pull request and it gets rejected. That can easily make you turn away from a community. But having this vibrant community where everybody is friendly and everybody, you know, sort of leads by example, is probably one of the most powerful things that can happen. It's also important that it's very accessible. And, you know, I think a large part of that is really you, Chris. And I hope you take credit for that, because I really feel like, you know, probably that so much of it just comes down to keeping things accessible. And when people come into the community and they start reading the docs, they're all so impressed. I've heard that over and over again, right? The Vue docs are impressive. And I want to bet that like a huge part of that is what you created, you know, when you started on the team, what you wrote, how you made it accessible, and then how you led by example to let other people help. So I think you're probably a big part as well of this, as to why Vue is getting as popular as it is.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, obviously I'm not the only person who works in the docs. You know, we have something like 345 contributors now. So many people have helped make it what it is and continue to help improve it.
You can deflect. It's all right.
But yeah, I definitely have appreciated working with Evan, and I appreciate that even when like we disagree on something, he's always been willing to explain why.
Yeah.
You know, it's never just like, shut up, Chris, this is what we're doing. And sometimes we do disagree, you know, especially around you know, features and stuff like that. And almost always, you know, we end up agreeing in the end. And there are some rare occasions where I don't agree with the decision that Evan makes. And 80% of the time, when I disagree with him, even after our discussion, I find out later, like months later sometimes, like, oh yeah, I see what he was thinking now. Like, that was a good decision. So I think we're in really good hands in a lot of ways, like culturally and just the insight he has for building tools, like building teams. Mm-hmm. That's been really amazing. And I continue to learn a lot from him and a lot of other people on the team as well. I'm just really impressed. Like, as the docs, like, I have to ask people questions all the time because I am usually not the content expert, like the best content expert for every individual thing. And so I have to pick people's brains, and people are always willing to answer questions and, you know, come up with like demos to help me understand something. It's been really, really great, especially since most people are doing that in their free time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's powerful.
So in terms of fears in the community, have you seen other communities kind of destroyed by fear, where, you know, people aren't afraid to, or are afraid to, you know, admit that they've made mistakes or admit that they don't know something? And if so, like, do you have any suggestions, like concrete suggestions for how, like, in the Vue community and people outside the Vue community can perhaps build the kind of culture that they want to be a part of?
Well, I know I sometimes can fall into the competition trap, which basically means, like, you know, I might, you know, create a library to help Vue, but somebody else created another library, and now we're sort of competing against each other, and now that's just sort of creates this atmosphere of competition. Or even in the education space, there's, you know, other people creating educational stuff with Vue, and I might feel like, oh, you know, they're doing this, and look what they did, and they're trying to compete with me. But I try my best to try to stay out of that space, because that's a space built of fear. When in reality, you know, there's enough space for all of us. Like, the educational space for Vue is still quite empty when you look at it compared to, like, a community of, like, Java programmers. The space for open source libraries that people can use with Vue is also quite empty when you look at how many libraries are out there for you know, Java projects. People need variety. They need options. And that's what's going to help them succeed, because, you know, each option is going to be slightly different. And when I look at educational resources, it's sort of the same way. You know, when you go to learn a technology, you don't pick up one book and then you're an expert. You pick up multiple books. You're going to use multiple ways of learning. People are going to have subscriptions to multiple different ways, you know, of learning Vue, because they each teach differently and they each have different topics, right? So I just don't want anyone to be discouraged when they feel like they want to create something. You know, there needs to be a library for Vue that does X, or someone needs to write a blog post that does X. Oh, but somebody's already done that. I'd like for them to sort of take a step back and go, but just because somebody's done that doesn't necessarily mean I shouldn't. Because a thriving community is one that there is tons of content out there, tons of blog posts, tons of podcasts, tons of educational resources. Obviously, you know, you can take a step back and go, well, I could create my own, or maybe I can contribute to the existing one to add that feature I needed. And sure, you know, see if you can contribute to that other one before you create your own. But don't be discouraged from creating your own. Because there is so much room and there's so much growth for this community to yet have, and so much opportunity for everyone.
So that's an interesting point. So there's a lot, I mean, we're still in the beginning stages. There's not a ton of education out there. I mean, we have great resources like the Vue Mastery, which is talking about the official documentation, of course, that's great, but there is more out there. I mean, there's more to be done, and there's definitely gaps in the knowledge and things like that. Now, as a person that's created products, Greg, and you've launched them and got them out there. And I've heard from just listening to this podcast that you've done things like contacted the core contributors and got your videos on different places. I mean, how do you, if you're going to create content, I mean, the worst thing is you create content and no one sees it. Like, how do we become, especially as developers, better at self-promotion? How do we get our cool new Vue blog post that we just wrote or a new plugin? How do we get more people to find out about it?
That's a good question. So the easiest thing you can do is, you know, self-promotion. Besides tweeting about it and telling all your friends and going on to the Vue discourse, that's kind of why we have the Vue newsletter and Vue podcast. If you go to news.vuejs.org, there's a place where you can submit your news. And that gets onto our mailing list, which gets sent out to almost 10,000 Vue developers. And every week we produce the Vue podcast, where we basically take what is on those news and we, Adam and I, you know, discuss it. So this is something that, you know, the podcast is hopefully something you, it's just 5 to 7 minutes that you can listen to, you know, on your commute or when you're mowing your lawn or washing your cat or doing the dishes, whatever you're doing, you can just listen to it, you know, 5 to 8 minutes a week, and you get made aware of some of the newest libraries and blog posts in the community. So, you know, I always used to say, like, creating content is like 50% creation and 50% promotion, right? So when I create content, it's like, okay, I need to be spending probably 50% of my time figuring out how to get the word out. It's not good enough just to create it. The same thing with like open source libraries. It's not good enough just to create it. You got to take the time to get it out there. And don't just submit it to Vue News. Submit it to all the other places. Make sure, you know, Anthony Gore can put it in his Vue.js developers newsletter. Make sure that you put it on the other JavaScript newsletters. See if they'll cover it. Like, take the time to get the word out about your content. And you're just, by doing that, you're helping the community because you're just spreading the knowledge.
That's very cool. I know that I've talked to Anthony before, and I was going to promote something on his course. And I know he has, I guess there's a difference between you created this cool thing and then you want to promote it, like advertise it on his newsletter. I know there's differences. Is there a difference there if you want to actually advertise versus it's just news that you want to get out there?
I'm glad you asked that question because, you know, as sort of the official Vue newsletter, you know, we shy away from, you know, we've got some rules as to like, you know, what we can't cover and what we can't. So if you basically have a service that you create for developers and you have to pay for it to use it and you just want to promote that, then you should sponsor it. You should, you know, pay some money to the Vue.js project and then we will put you as a sponsored slot. But if you've got content that is, you know, free knowledge that you're not charging for, then we'll cover it. And we'll even cover stuff where it's a blog post or tutorial on how to use a commercial service, as long as it has a pretty healthy, you know, like free level, right? As long as you can start using it for free. Like, I think, you know, we covered, what was it? Netlify or something like that. Covered like Netlify. Yeah, I think it was called on the podcast this week. And that's just because, you know, you can use it and it has a pretty good free tier. So as long as you're not, you know, as long as you don't submit your, you know, paid Udemy course as something you want us to cover, right? Then that's fine. As long as it's free education, right? So another good example of this is like on demastery.com, right? We have paid lessons and we have free lessons. And last week, you know, I took one of my paid lessons and I made it free so that anybody, even without logging in, can consume the content. And that made it so that we were able to promote it in the official newsletter because you don't have to log in, you don't have to do nothing. You can just get value simply from reading without having to sign up. So that's sort of the barrier of entry. Yeah, you can even just submit a library. You know, if you want, obviously, if you create a library and you want people to engage, you should probably also write a tutorial to get people up and running to get started. But even if you don't want to write that tutorial, you can still submit it as a library because we have a library section in the newsletter where we just put libraries in there that might not have a great tutorial, but still need to get the word out.
That's interesting. Yeah, I know. By the way, whoever is behind the marketing department of Netlify, I'd like to talk to, because I hear about them everywhere in all these different podcasts that they're like on syntax.fm. They promote them and now, yeah, I'm hearing them everywhere. Anyways,
Well, Divya might know. She works at Netlify.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Exactly. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, and so the marketing strategy is interesting because basically the reason they got on the podcast was somebody wrote a tutorial showing how to create ViewPress on Netlify with a CMS and an authorization system. And looking at their free, and so it was a tutorial about how to set that up. And it was really clear to me that you could set that up and use that, and you might not ever need to get past the free tier. So there's really like no reason not to plug it. It could be really useful.
Yeah, that's pretty smart. Yeah, and it's great service from everything I've heard, of course. Very cool. Yeah, I think that's the what people sometimes get scared of who have these communities is that the marketers and the spammers are going to come in and just spam stuff that they want you to do. But obviously, you have curation and checking to make sure that this really makes sense. And then the differentiation between people are selling a product versus they just want to get something out from what they're doing. I think that's smart.
Yeah.
And every community has some of that. You know, not everybody is trying to give back to the community quite as much. You know, that some people seem to more be trying to cash in.
Mm-hmm. Which is, a little discouraging as somebody who doesn't like to be sold to, but it's also encouraging as somebody who, wants to see open source development thrive. You kind of have to have the commercial enterprise to support a thriving ecosystem. So it's like a double-sided sword there,
Yeah, I think people who don't understand open source don't realize you can make money off of open source, not just people donating their time. I mean, there's a lot of other benefits. And of course, when people create businesses around it or create education, I think that's a great thing to do because it's needed and it helps build the community and it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, like ViewMastery as a business is not profitable. Like we're not making enough money to pay Adam and I's salary, right? And we kind of knew that going into it, that Vue is kind of a new technology and it's going to take time to build up. And obviously we don't have a ton of content yet. That definitely has something to do with it. So we're kind of taking a gamble that eventually we'll have a sustainable business. And we hope that will happen someday, but we're probably not going to be there we're not going to know if it is a success, if it's sustainable for another, 5 or 6 months. We're taking a risk on the community and hoping that people find enough value in it to support us so we can keep on doing it.
Yeah, that's admirable. Yeah. You got to put the time and effort in to build it and give back a lot. And I think that'll come back to you. It's like doing videos on YouTube, you don't get paid much just for putting out the information out there, but I think there's other ways you get paid back and it takes time to build authority and things like that.
Yeah. What really gets me excited is like, if we got to that point where we were making, anywhere, I don't think it'll get as successful as Code School, but if we were making $100,000 a month, that means we're donating $25,000 a month back to the Vue.js project itself, which it motivates me. Like I love the idea that we'd be able to educate people and make that much of an impact on an open source project.
Very cool.
Yeah. And as a fellow educator, I can confirm that it's surprisingly hard to make a decent living on education.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Workshops are kind of an exception to that, where you can actually get paid fairly for your time in a lot of cases, but that's usually not the case. And for when I teach a university course, for example, I'm usually paid less for that university course than I'm paid for a single workshop, even though it's way more work.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's a whole nother business. It's a whole nother thing. I've learned more about business in the last 10 years than I ever really cared to know the hard way.
Yeah. So, sort of paid for business school one way or another, whether you went there or not.
Oh yeah. And if you're interested in learning about that, all the hard lessons I learned the hard way, just Google Greg Pollack Founders Talk. I've got sort of 3 or 4 talks that I've put out over the years that talk about all the lessons I've learned in business. If you're an entrepreneur, if somebody wants to build your own tech business, I highly recommend you taking a watch. I'm sure you'll get a lot out of it. And if you're in a startup and you want to learn how to do equity, right and do well by the people who are working with you. You know, I think I did things well enough with Code School, but since then I learned about this technique called the dynamic equity split from this book called Slicing Pie by Mike Moyer. And I created a video on my blog that basically lays out how to do dynamic equity in a way that is probably the most fair way possible. And it just has to do with like the people that, like the money that you're not paying somebody, they earn in equity, which earns over time. And it just makes more sense. Because the last thing you want to do is end up with, you know, you work with somebody for 2 years and then they bailed, but then, you know, they walked away from the company with owning 50% of your company and there's nothing you can do about it. So you need to kind of protect yourself in the beginning and reward people for putting their blood, sweat, and tears into the company in a way that makes sense.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I'll have to look that up to see how, a better way of doing equity. I know we're getting a little off topic off the view, but I know you do some, I think you do some investing too. Have you, Rob Walling talks about fund strapping. Is that something you've been interested in doing? It's like the idea where you kind of invest in companies, but you're not, it's not like a traditional investment. You get paid back in dividends later on when the business does better.
I've invested, financials are not my strong suit, to be honest with you. I usually lean on other people for that. I did here in Orlando start, the first technical accelerator here in the city called Starter Studio. So I've learned more about that. And some of the startups that I graduated from that program, I've ended up, investing a little bit of money in. Usually they raise investment and I just sort of hop on. So I've invested a little bit back in the startup community here, which feels like the right thing to do. Pay it forward.
Awesome. Yep.
And I should say, if you're interested in that dynamic equity split, if you go to gregpollock.com, that's on my personal blog. You can find my founders talks and that information there.
Great. And we'll try to drop that in the show notes too.
Thanks.
So I have a question that it kind of goes back into what you're talking about in terms of how much you really love teaching. And I was curious about your journey and how you figured out you're really good at that. Or like what brought you to spending so much time on education in the first place?
Yeah, it just started with creating a blog. It started out with creating the Ruby users group here in Orlando, meeting a friend of mine, and he was like, maybe we should create a blog on Ruby on Rails. What should we call it? Well, I just bought this domain, Rails Envy. And like, what was it? Like, because everybody was envious at the time of how you wrote a little bit of code to get a lot done. So the slogan was, it's not the size of the app that matters, it's how you code it. If you get the Rails Envy joke. Anyways, I started blogging on there and I just noticed that when I would take the time to write a blog post and, put it on Dig at the time was big and it would get dug on Dig and lots of people would find it. When I took the time to write long blog posts that they became the de facto resource for learning that particular aspect of that new tech. And people came back and just told me how much they appreciated me putting it up there. And I just got a lot of, it gave me a lot of motivation. And if you want to get deep for a second, what that comes from is I had the kind of father who, even when you were 95% right, you were still 100% wrong. And so he really kind of enjoyed correcting people. He's the kind of guy who would like correct people with a smile on his face. And so the impression I got as a kid pretty early on is that maybe I'm not that smart. And so I think what I realized is, so when I started seeing how other people were having really, were really appreciative when I was able to explain something well. It's kind of funny how that works, right? If you ask me, what's one thing that you think you might be better at than most people? What would I say? I would say taking a technical topic and explaining it. And I think part of that is because, I go to my dad sometimes and I'd ask him, what do you do for a living and how do you do it? And he would be like, it's too complex. So I think because of that, I'm just really motivated. I really love it when I can help a lot of people understand something that they might have thought was too difficult. That motivates me.
So was it, it was something that you kind of fell into in the beginning, and then you found yourself loving it more and more based on the feedback that you were getting from people and how useful your resources were?
Oh, yeah. Blog posts and then podcasts and speaking at conferences and realizing like, oh, this is cool. I can like submit talks to like all these different conferences and figuring out the right strategy for doing that. And really enjoyed speaking in front of people. And I put a lot of work into a single talk, go present at a conference, come back home, film myself presenting it, put it online for free. And, you know, started getting a pretty big following with Rails. And that's part of the reason why Code School was so quickly successful and profitable, was because, like I said earlier, I spent the prior 4 or 5 years doing blog posts, presenting at conferences, creating videos online, all for free and all to drive traffic to the consultancy. I wasn't making any money off of teaching. That was just kind of something I enjoyed. Code School was Code School was me figuring out how to monetize what I love doing.
Hey, hearing your path to education is really interesting. For me, it's kind of somewhat similar, actually. Like, I was told growing up that there were a lot of things that I just like couldn't do. I'm just like not the kind of person who can do that thing. Like throughout my childhood, I had a pretty severe speech impediment. So even just like talking was something that I was told, you know, I probably just would never be able to do. I was told I would never be able to play a musical instrument. In my first computer class, like I broke the computer so bad that I was told like, maybe you can just like sit in the corner and read. You know, and so there are so many moments where like I was told I wasn't able to do something. And then I eventually, because like I'm still really curious, was able to figure it out, even though it took me longer than it would take other people usually. And like realizing like you can actually figure it out, and like not being afraid of failure as much over time. And also like kind of like being angry at the people who told you you couldn't do things. And so like wanting to educate as sort of like a way to get back at them, you know, to show people that they can do this stuff.
You know, there's no better motivator.
They don't think that they're the kind of person. There are a lot of people who think like, you know, I'm not really the kind of person who could code. There are a lot of people who think like that. You know, they're just not like a code person. They don't have the mind for it.
Yeah. And it's what's crazy about it is you think you're proving it to everybody else, but really who you're trying to prove it to is yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I understand the impulse. Like it's easier to just say, I'm not that kind of person than to believe that you might be the kind of person and then try and then fail. Like that's way more painful.
Mm-hmm.
That's a way bigger hit to the ego.
Yeah. Just confirms your fear about yourself. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see evidence in the world that I'm stupid. So I'm going to try to avoid that whenever possible.
Yep.
And I think that's why, going back to what you were mentioning in terms of having such a rich community who are very willing to help and like motivate you and push you, is like very great, very awesome. And like, that's kind of what I see in the Vue community. When people are pushing out libraries, there's a lot of support and a lot of people who are willing to help. For example, if you're interested in contributing to Vue, Chris is like a really great resource. And a lot of people on the core team are just like, hey, we're here to help you. And so even if you have doubts yourself, just like doing the initial reach out and having that support is like really, really awesome, especially for newer developers or people who don't feel as confident in their ability to code. Because I think that is immense in helping someone, you know, take that next step in their career or skill level.
Yeah. And, you know, now I think about it, part of the reason why I teach online and I never became a teacher in person is likely because I'm afraid. I'm afraid of being in front of a group of people who might ask me questions that I don't have the answer to. And so I ended up teaching online because it's safer that way. And videos where nobody can appear, you know, try to ask a question and then confirm my fear that I'm indeed a fraud, right?
Yeah, because you can choose to ignore them if they tweeted at you and you were like, well, didn't see your tweet.
Yeah, I'm getting better at that. I have a whole series of strategies of coping with that when that happens now. And my favorite, like when you're speaking in front of a group of people and someone asks you a question that you're not sure of the answer, you simply go, oh, wow, that's a really good question. Does anybody here have the answer to that?
Yeah, that's great.
You pretend like you're trying to make a point by letting somebody else be smart.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think like being someone who doesn't have all the answers, being someone who things don't come as naturally to, like that's a real asset in teaching as well. Like the people who, you know, can understand something really intuitively never really have to think too hard about it. And so it's often difficult for them to explain to someone else how this works because they just like, they do it and it works. Mm-hmm. Whereas people who struggle a little bit more really have to break down like big concepts into little pieces and then, mm-hmm. you know, try to understand each piece and then try to see how they fit together. And that makes you so much better at being able to explain these details to other people. Mm-hmm. And also I think just makes you a better developer.
Yeah.
Because you understand things understand things more deeply after you go through that process.
Yeah. You know, you just reminded me of another answer to a question you asked earlier about my experience with other open source technologies. When Rails hit 3.0 and came out with some additional features and changed their syntax, or even with 2.0, as Rails got more mature, it got harder and harder for beginners to pick up because they added all of these new advanced, you know, techniques and algorithms and standards. And for the people who were there since 1.0, they made perfect sense because they were using the latest standards. But all the people who were working on the technology, we were all advanced at that point. So everything made sense to us. And all of a sudden, it became less accessible to beginners, which it was unfortunate. And so I definitely think, you know, as the Vue community matures, I'm a little more, you know, I feel good that we have people like you, Chris, like on the team and communicating with Evan, because when stuff like that happens, and it will happen where it's like with newer versions, you know, there's a new syntax that comes up and it makes sense, but it makes it harder for beginners, that people like you and others in the community are going to speak up and go, let's not do this for the sake of, you know, having a more efficient, you know, library, because it's going to close us off to beginners. And I think Evan himself is a great example of that because he has such a UI and design background. He himself can appreciate keeping things very accessible to all levels of developers, which gives me more confidence. I'm hoping that won't happen as Vue gets more mature.
Yeah, and he also is an advocate for accessibility too. I don't have to fight him on that, which is really helpful.
That's great. And I think we kind of saw that with Angular too. Some of the things with the newer versions of Angular, I remember as I went to learn them, I was like, wow, this makes sense, but this is going to be harder for people jumping in.
Yeah. Okay. So unfortunately, I have a hard stop coming up soon. So I think we'll have to move into picks now.
Do you run your own freelance business? Or maybe you're thinking about picking up some business on the side. Well, then you need FreshBooks. FreshBooks is the quickest and easiest way to get invoices out to your clients. It's easy to use. It works anywhere, available from any device, on the desktop, iPhone, iPad, Android, and all of your data is backed up and secure. And it makes it really easy to get organized and get paid. You'll be tracking time, logging expenses, and invoicing your clients in no time. You can also save time billing, freeing up several days per month to focus on the work that you love, and you get paid faster. FreshBooks customers are paid on average 5 days faster because there's a link on the invoice that says pay me now. And it's a great way to grow your business. Plus, FreshBooks is offering a 30-day trial. That's right, 30-day trial if you try them out. So go to gofreshbooks.com/devchat and enter devchat in the how did you hear about us section. Once again, for a 30-day trial, go to gofreshbooks.com/devchat and enter devchat in the how did you hear about us section.
Divya, would you like to go first? Since you're probably falling asleep, it's almost 4 a.m. for you.
Sure. So I have two picks. The first pick is this tool called Sherlock, which is on Commons host, or it's gitlab.com/commons/host/Sherlock. And it is a tool that allows you to track to trace your dependencies in your HTML, CSS, and JavaScript specifically to optimize for HTTP server push, which I think is really cool. And I actually met a couple of the developers who are working on it who are based in Singapore. It's pretty neat. that was a cool one. And then there's another tool called Tag UI, which is a CI tool for CLI tool for automating user interactions. So you can, there's like various commands that allows you to send an email or like scrape a website and so on, which I think is really cool. And the guy who is really incredible, because he mentioned that this was his introduction to web development, supposedly, because he's not a web developer, but he's created such an amazing tool. So those are my two picks.
All right. Thank you. And Joe, are you still around? I think Joe might have had to drop out earlier. All right. Doesn't look like Joe's there. So Eric, you're next.
Yeah, I have a pick. So this is a blog that came out last month. It's from the Ghost blog, which is a blogging platform. It's after 5 years and 3 million, here's everything we've learned from building Ghost. And it just kind of reminded me of the conversation we're having today, talking about, you know, open source and community. And so these guys created this open source platform called Ghost, which was sort of supposed to be a competitor to WordPress. Kind of WordPress has been known to be bloated and not great. And so they kind of created this other blogging platform, and it talks about their journey from just the little beginnings. And I think they even started on Kickstarter, and then, you know, growing to almost over a million dollar annual run rate, and how they built a distributed team, and how they're basically their service is selling the blog, a hosted Ghost blog platform is how they make money. Although the Ghost is an open source product itself. So it's kind of interesting how they were able to make a business out of it.
Cool. That sounds kind of similar to the WordPress model.
Yeah. Yeah. It has some similarities between how WordPress makes money.
All right. And Adam, would you like to go next?
Sure. Yeah. So we talked about on the podcast before, communities, that's CMTY. It's a platform built by the creators of Nuxt. And so I think it's just a kind of an ingenious and common sense tool. What it does is kind of separates, like GitHub issues, which should stay issues. And so it creates a separate platform where people can discuss an open source technology and questions they have about it, and create a really kind of transparent and open dialogue platform for people to learn and communicate within an open source framework, staying separate and out of the GitHub issue. So I think it just is a valuable tool, and people should check it out.
Darn it, you stole part of one of my picks.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Any other picks?
And this can be anything. Doesn't have to be tech related.
Doesn't have to be tech related.
Okay, sure. So on Netflix, there's a documentary on the comedian Tig Notaro, and I found it very moving. It's like her story of her mother dying, and she was diagnosed with cancer, and how she kind of used humor to find the light and the healing through that. And it's just a really beautiful documentary telling her story. So I'd highly recommend that.
Awesome. Do you remember what it's called?
The actual title, I'm not sure, if anybody could search for Tig, T-I-G, Notaro on Netflix. I'm sure you'll find it.
Okay. Great. Yeah, I think she has some stand-up on there too.
Yeah, she has some stand-up. I think it's just called Tig, T-I-G.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. Any more picks?
That's it for me for now.
All right. Greg, how about you?
Let's see. This could be anything. I really enjoyed 13 Reasons Why on Netflix. If you haven't watched it yet, if you are like me, you're that sort of nerd through high school who felt sort of outcast, I think you will it'll resonate with you. I love shows that make me feel, so I think that one's really good. You know, I really enjoyed the first second. I just finished the second season. If you are a struggling If you've got kids and you're going through a divorce, or you went through a divorce like I had to, I highly recommend, there's a podcast from CBC called Alone, A Love Story. I highly recommend it. It's really kind of can help you through it. And then also, I just this last weekend went and did something called the Landmark Forum. I do all these little, you know, self-help stuff. So if you find yourself, if you're in a place in your life where you're feeling stuck if there's, you know, whether it's family, business, or otherwise, and you can't seem to figure out how to get through it or how to get past your own limitations and you want to open up a new chapter, look up Landmark Forum. See if there's one around your city. And it's a really affordable 3-day program that's really good for helping people get unstuck and finding more meaning and peace in their lives. I'll leave it there.
All right. Thank you, Greg. And my picks for today, first, on the topic of community building, you know, there are a lot of other people that I just want to give a quick shout out to who are really like instrumental in the Vue community. And I know I'm going to be missing people, but like one huge one is Torsten Lundborg, also known as Linusborg on Twitter and GitHub. He's everywhere in the internet, basically, like answering people's questions and being really patient. The other week we had him on and he said one of his biggest tips for community building is to just keep asking why, you know, so if someone has a question and you think it's a bad question, you know, it's like dig a little bit deeper to see like what their issue is. You know, they might not know exactly how to explain it. So, you know, I help people dig deeper, and see what's actually going on. And I absolutely agree with that. Sarah Dresner obviously does so much work, to promote the Vue community. She's also on Twitter answering people's questions and she creates so many like free resources for people. It's really, really incredible. And Gusto, I actually don't know their real name, but they moderate our chat. I'm actually not even sure which pronoun to use. And they do a great job. Pratik Patel, who organized with us VueConf US, and is also organized in Connect Tech, where we have a Vue track coming up. Tracy Lee and Deanna Levitt at this.media, who have helped us on several events, including most recently Vue Contributor Days, which was fantastic. And I really look forward to doing it again next year. And of course, Joe at Framework Summit, you know, working on that. Like that's, I really appreciate the work that he's doing. And he's actually organizing some stuff to bring the maintainers from all these different frameworks together to have these conversations that we normally don't get a chance to have about like how we manage community and how we, you know, write documentation and how we organize ourselves. Really important conversations to have where we can learn from each other. And I'm really grateful for him for providing a place where we can do that. And my next pick is Sebastian Datading, who's this is separate from community building. He's probably my favorite UX researcher for gamification. And he talks about when gamification works and also when it fails and sometimes even harms the experience. And he's German, so his name is pronounced Datading, but in like American English, you might pronounce it Dieterding, Dieterding. And then my final pick is two books, which is kind of a cheat, I know. So we talked a lot about like fear in communication, and two books that I think could be helpful. This is something that you really care about is Nonviolent Communication and Difficult Conversations. And I think there are actually several books called Difficult Conversations. So I can't remember the author of this one. So I apologize for that.
Difficult Conversations.
Difficult Conversations, not Crucial Conversations. I haven't read Crucial Conversations, so I don't know anything about that.
Yeah.
And then those are all my picks for today. Thank you everyone for joining us for Views on Vue, and we'll see you next week.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.